You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. Sitting across from me, as always, good buddy, good friend, political whiz kid. Can I say that?
That's fine.
Yeah. Alex, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like when it comes to anything that's actually politics, you know the answer. I'm more of a philosophy guy myself. And today we're going to get into some areas where I'm going to need your help. Because when it comes to ignorance, I've got it in spades. I wanted to talk today a little bit about why people's votes matter. Because there's so often I hear people make these arguments that, well, I don't want to vote for a third party candidate, specifically because these third-party candidates have no shot of winning. Now, I'm not going to say whether they're right or wrong. In many cases, they're right. Oh, by the way, if you don't know, this is the Battleborn Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party. So when we're talking about third-party, we're talking specifically about libertarians. But there are other third-party candidates that
That have also lose spectacularly.
Yes. there's loss to go around here. So they say, you know, your vote doesn't matter, so why vote for it? And the only great argument that I have on that, and maybe I'm being too boisterous by saying it's a great argument, but it is that if your vote doesn't matter for a third-party candidate, then it certainly doesn't matter for one of the primary, you know, a Democrat or a Republican, because your vote is just as minuscule for them as it is for anybody else. So anytime somebody says, like, well, it wouldn't matter if you voted for them, well, then it shouldn't matter either if you voted for a Republican or a Democrat. What would matter is if you stopped making that argument and people actually voted for a candidate that they thought was the best to be elected. That seems like the most logical, the logical path. However, there are other really, really great reasons to vote for third parties. One of those is something called ballot access. Now, I am far from an expert on ballot access. Maybe I shouldn't say that you're an expert on ballot access, but I'm throwing you under the fire on this because I need a good explanation of what ballot access is and why it matters for the people go out and vote so that ballot access is granted.
Well, so ballot access is different state to state, first of all, and I'm no expert on most states, but I can speak to the couple I've lived in since becoming a registered voter. And specifically in Nevada, there's three ways to obtain and maintain your ballot access. And this isn't any kind of legal advice, by the way, but you can look up the NRS yourself. It's pretty straightforward. I believe it's Chapter 293 off the top of my head.
What?
And
you know the chapter?
Well, this is the one that deals with political parties. So I am very well versed in that chapter. In fact, we are thinking about putting forward a ballot initiative to put forward ranked choice voting, which is something that we're going to talk about later on. But in any event, ballot access is basically the right of a group of people formalized as a political party to be on the ballot. And the reason for this is so that you don't end up with hundreds and hundreds. There are literally like hundreds of people that have declared political parties in the state of Nevada. I believe you only need an address of a constitution or bylaws and like five people. I think that's like the only requirements legally in the state of Nevada to declare a political party. In fact, you might only need one person. I really don't remember.
So what you're saying is it's so easy to start a political party that if everybody did that, you'd end up, when people go to the voting booths, there'd be so many options on the ballot that it would be detrimental or challenging for a person
voting. For voters, yeah. So what they do is they set up special requirements for people to have ballot access as a party. And they break this up into two categories. You have major party and minor party. And the difference is the number of registered voters. So if you have 5% or more, is it 15%? I believe it's 5% or more of registered voters in the state. You're considered a major party, and that means your process is just a little bit different. So anybody in your party can declare candidacy. You have a primary. All of the machinery that people who have come to us from the Republicans and Democrats are used to. Minor parties work a little differently. So minor parties that have obtained ballot access choose their candidates at convention and put them directly onto the ballot. And minor parties without ballot access are all the ones that have declared, but they didn't reach a certain threshold. And there's three ways. Way one is very difficult. It's petitions. And I believe you have to get 1% of all the votes that were cast in the last governor race or something like that. Oh, my gosh. So you have to get an insanely large number of petitions signed with way one. Way two is you have to maintain 1% ballot access. And way three is you have to achieve 5% or more in a statewide race. Like,
so wait, what's Congress the 1% ballot access? What does that mean?
Voter registration. When you register to vote as a libertarian, you're helping us inch closer. In fact, as of the end of July, we're 499 registered voters away from 1%. That is insanely close. We are very close to having automatic ballot access going forward. Now, we've earned our ballot access for almost all of the last 20 years through how well we do in elections. So once you have ballot access, you can maintain it by getting that third criteria, that 5% in a federal or statewide race, like governor or county commission or something that gets you enough votes that you can get to about a 5% of the people that have casted votes in that state. So, like, for example, last election, we ran someone for Congress, not because we thought, oh my God, we're going to definitely win Congress. We ran them for Congress because we call them ballot access candidate. And this is a very common technique. It means that we have to choose a race, and usually we run like a state treasurer, or county, you know, board of supervisors, or they run somebody who will get enough votes that we can maintain our ballot access in the state of Nevada. But if we get to 1%, we won't even have to worry about that. 1% voter registration means automatic ballot access, and they like the official day that they choose is some prescribed time before the election that they snapshot, and if you're 1% or higher, you're good. And now, this is a relatively passive and easy way to get voter registration. The way we went through it, of course, is we did lots and lots of petitions. And then we maintained our ballot access by running these ballot access candidates. And then the easiest way to go forward and maintain it is the same way the major parties do, which is just voter registration. So when you register to vote as a libertarian, you are helping us out tremendously in many ways. And one of the ways is now we know about you. Now we can reach out to you and ask, hey, what do you want to see changed in the state of Nevada? And we have a lot of lobbying efforts, and we have a lot of things that we do to work with the existing legislature to try to improve Nevadans' lives with liberty and responsibility. The only way to do that is for us to know from our libertarian Nevadans, what is it you want to see changed? What is it you want to see different? And so if you have any ideas, register to vote, sign up on our website, let us know. We're always looking for feedback. We're always looking for draft BDRs. If you would like to draft one and send it in, we'll take a look at it. At least by being registered to vote, you get your foot in the door with us. I know the major parties, they couldn't possibly offer that because there's so many people. But we can. We're growing very fast. We have a large number of registered voters, just about 1%. But it's still small enough that our very competent statewide leadership team and county leadership teams can take a look at these specific proposals and work with our constituents, and you are our constituents. As soon as you register to vote as a libertarian, we consider you our constituents. So anyway, this is what ballot access is in a crux. It's basically just a way for us to put forward candidates onto the ballot. There's only one other minor party with ballot access in the state of Nevada, and that's the Independent America Party. And it's pretty widely believed that a lot of that is because people think that they're registering independent. They don't actually know much about the IAP's platform.
So that's simply a matter of just the fact that the name makes them go, yeah, I don't think I'm a Democrat or a Republican. So they go, I must be that third thing there.
Yes.
Oh.
So they have a lot of
good branding.
It is.
That's like I don't give a shit party. And then like suddenly you just see it grow out of control.
The rent is too damn high.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're actually an affiliate of the Constitution Party. So they had a Daryl Castle and them on the presidential ticket last year. And I would encourage people to check them out and find out that that's like the opposite of what we stand for in the middle. So they are, in my mind, more socially conservative than the Republicans.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They are, I don't want to say regressive, but sort of regressive. They want to go back to the good old days, and the good old days back when like the Bible was more important than the Constitution and things like that. You know, and as a Christian personally, I think the Bible's important, but I don't think it's like the book that we should live by.
Or
as a society,
it's fine to think anything's important. That's
But
the point is, you shouldn't be able to say anybody else should have to think it's important.
Exactly, and they still have some ideas that are just like totally not with the times. So anyway, if you think that's you, then you know power to you. But most people who are libertarian will not find much in common with them, other than they don't like the Democrats and Republicans.
So basically, a great secondary argument here is, even if your vote doesn't lead to this person becoming elected, it actually has implications as far as what happens with future elections. And that can create a snowball effect. So your vote might mean that the next election is going to put a libertarian on the ticket, right? And maybe that libertarian is still not going to win. But you know what it's going to do? It's going to create visibility for a libertarian party, which might result in more people registering as libertarians, because they know that that's now a possibility, or just investigating into the similar political views that you have. And now you've got a bigger team around you. And ultimately, even if we didn't win, but we see this growing number of voters every single time, you've got to wonder that what impact that's going to have on the Democrats or the Republicans or whoever is elected, right? They want these people's votes. So if they see a large amount of people voting for a particular cause, they might change their view of how they're going to address that cause. So your vote definitely matters. Now, there was something you mentioned earlier about ranked choice voting, which only heard about a couple years ago, and I think it's really, really cool, but I am the least qualified person in this room to explain it, and since there's only two of us, I figure this is your opportunity.
All right, well, not to bore you too much with the math, but one of the biggest problems with the current system is it's a prisoner's dilemma. So voters are sort of held hostage with this prisoner's dilemma of vote for the lesser of two evils, because if you don't, then someone you hate even more will get elected. So the Democrats and Republicans really pushed this narrative in 2016. So we were out there saying, you know what, fuck them, all right? Vote for Gary Johnson, somebody you actually believe in. But a lot of people, and it is a persuasive argument, I will admit, we're going, God, we got to just stop Hillary, that liar. Or we got to stop Trump, he's the next Hitler, or, you know, whatever, right? Like, both people from both sides, of the leaners, people who lean libertarian, but they came from the left or the right, they felt that the other person had put up the worst possible choice.
It stopped being about who are you voting for, and it started becoming who are you voting against, which just propelled all of this anti-party stuff rather than like pro information.
Exactly. And I would recommend to each and every one of you, not to touch too much on the last point, but vote for something. That's my best argument for voting for a third party. Vote for something you believe in. Don't vote against the other person. You might say to yourself, like just today I heard someone telling me, well, we got to vote for some other candidate because Senator Heller is so bad. We got to vote him out in the primary. And I was thinking to myself, that's not a good enough reason. That's not a good enough reason for me to vote for somebody. I'm going to vote for someone, not against the other person because they're worse. That's bullshit. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's 300 something million people in the United States. Surely we can find 573 of them for Congress and 100 for Senate that are good and worthy candidates that we can put up for office and actually get something done. And I couldn't stomach voting for someone I don't believe in. I don't have any reason to vote for. It's just, the other person's so bad. Don't vote for somebody, not against. And ranked choice voting is a idea that changes the game. So instead of playing the rigged game where it's a prisoner's dilemma of voting against someone, not for it, because it's a two-party, you know, dominated system, what it does is it breaks the mold. And very simply, and this is a common proposal for ranked choice voting, is that you rank the candidates in order. Now, suppose there were four candidates, and there's only one from each party still. So there would still be a party primary for the Republicans or Democrats, or some process. Some proposals, there's no primary anymore either. But there would be a process that each party would undergo to limit one candidate to the ballot.
So you rank them. So let's say if we were talking about the last presidential election, half the people might say, well, I want Hillary. Half the people might say, I want Trump. But then their second choice would be Johnson because they hate the other person so much.
Yes.
And what would that do? So mm-hmm. when they're counting up all the ballots, what does that mean for the for Johnson essentially in that?
So what it could mean, right, if this was employed nationwide, what it could mean is you could end up with somebody who both sides feel is a good compromise candidate. So and an easy one to talk about is this last election. Nobody really wanted Hillary or Donald Trump. And a lot of the reason people didn't vote for Johnson and Weld is because they felt that they didn't have a chance at winning and they were so worried about the other person. But if you had had ranked choice, then all we would have been really arguing is, hey, I realize that you got to stop Donald Trump or you got to stop Hillary Clinton, and that other, the person that you think will stop that can win is your number one. Let's be your number two, though, right? You're not going to vote. You're not going to put Donald Trump number two or Hillary Clinton number two. You're going to put somebody else. So put Gary Johnson number two. And what this could lead to is it with the point system. So it's the points, right? You add up points at the end, and everyone's 1, 2, 3, 4. One is worth so many points, two is worth so many points, etc. And the person with the most points at the end wins. Well, imagine
so if everybody voted
number two, Gary Johnson, and you had just a few people that voted number one, Gary Johnson, and everybody else voted ones and threes, one.
So Gary Johnson gets like 15% and everybody else splits down the middle with Trump or Hillary.
Ones and threes. And we soak up all their twos.
Yeah, okay.
And I know that's crazy math and you're trying to like write it down, but it's very simple, right? If you didn't vote for a major party candidate, you put us as number two. And if you did vote for a minor party candidate like Johnson, you put him as your number one. And what would happen is at the end of tallying up all the points is Johnson and Weld would have won. Why? Because they're the candidate that the majority of Americans were okay with. They weren't the top candidate for everybody, but it's no longer a winner takes all. If 50% plus one voted for Trump, he wins. That eliminates that entirely. What it says is you win based on the number of people who are okay with you, right? We ranked you in an order. And what this does is it encourages you to have a multi-party system. It encourages you to have 4, 5, 7, 8 choices to choose from. And I don't think it's confusing because it's one per party. You know where parties stand, right? If you're a Democrat or you're an independent or you're a Libertarian or you're a Green Party, right? You know where those people stand. So it's really not so confusing. You can vote party line even. You could just vote, okay, this person, 1, 2, 3. Now, typically what you'll see is ranked choice. You'll only rank your top four. So even if there was a million, which there won't, like we said earlier, there's ballot access requirements that would keep a limited number of parties on the ballot, which I think is a pretty reasonable thing. I know a lot of libertarians will crucify me for saying that, but there are some states like Ohio and Arizona where it's just like ludicrous, the number of signatures required. They can only do a petition. Like there's all kinds of insane ballot access states that are terrible, and there's probably, I would say, about 15 of those that are just absolutely detrimental to the political process.
Are there any states that are doing this ranked choice voting or any counties? Or
The state of Maine passed it as a voter initiative in 2016. So at their next election, assuming that the courts don't overturn it or something, at the next election, they will be using ranked choice voting. And that's an interesting and a cool opportunity for a third party to win some seats. Now, granted, you still have to run a good campaign as a third party. A lot of people take for granted that like libertarians are going to be the third choice for people or someone's number two choice. There's no guarantee that we are, right? The only guarantee is that we are large. We have a great set of ideas that people really resonate with, right? They like the idea of the government getting out of their wallets and out of their bedrooms. That resonates with people. And so that's why, one of the reasons that we're the third largest party in the United States and the fastest growing in the state of Nevada, for sure.
If we wanted to do that here, if we wanted to do that in the state of Nevada, how do we do it? How do we make that happen?
So the state of Nevada, and again, I'm boring you with details.
No, but I want to know. Thing. I want to, how do we do this?
Yeah, the political process that has been proposed is a direct initiative. So what this means is that you draft a constitutional, or not even a constitutional change, it'd just be a change to the NRS. Now, I believe that you'll probably need a constitutional change, but the people who are attorneys here tell me that that is probably not necessary in a well-written Nevada revised statutes NRS initiative. So there's two processes. If the voters want to vote on a bill, just like the marijuana one that was voted on by the voters, it has to be two consecutive elections. And if it's a direct initiative, what it means is it first goes before a before the legislators, and they can vote for or against it. And if they vote for it, it only has to go past one election, the following one, the one that elects their next group. But if it does not pass the legislature, it's just goes to a vote of the people two times in a row. So indirect initiatives are constitutional amendment changes. Those are two times in a row, and they go directly to the people because it's a change to the United or to the United States, to the Nevada Constitution.
Okay.
So that's a process. What is really cool about this is, and I love the idea that Nevada's got this, a lot of states do. What's really cool about this, Tyus, is that you have a voice as the people to override what the stupid legislators are sometimes doing. Just like with marijuana. Marijuana passed two times in a row, and that's why it's legal, right? It didn't pass because of the legislature. They were afraid to legalize marijuana, but the people weren't. The people of Nevada spoke very loudly and clearly, and in no small part thanks to the efforts of the Marijuana Policy Project and Normal and these sort of organizations that are policy think tanks and this sort of thing. They have been an incredible partner and worked very hard to get both of these passed in two consecutive elections. That is something we would have to do for ranked choice voting. There's no reason that the legislators would ever vote for this because they know it spells the end for them. For a lot of them that are shitty and they're just the only person that makes it past their party primary, they know that as long as they can cater to their base of people in their 75% gerrymandered district, that they're good. They don't care about that other 25%. But ranked choice voting, even if there wasn't a third party, what ranked choice voting does is it gives the voters that are in the middle, the nonpartisans, it gives you a ton of power. Because what it means is that the candidates can't just go and rally up their base of Social Democrats or their base of Tea Partiers or whoever. They actually have to go towards the middle. They, you know, a major party would have to vie for the other major party's people to be your number two. They would be forced to think about what a Republican district would have to think about what Democrats cared about, even if there was no minor party, because of ranked choice voting. Because they know that if they do too much on the extreme, a third party will show up and dethrone them.
It literally lowers the lines between parties and makes it about the issues.
It does. It makes it about the issues, and it makes it about the candidate and how trustworthy they are and how much you trust them to do what's best for all of your constituents, not just the ones that are in your party. And today, with the gerrymandering and all of the things that
we've talked about. You mentioned gerrymandering twice, and we've never discussed it.
Oh, we haven't?
We have never discussed it on this show.
So for those who don't know, and this is something that luckily is taught in schools these days, I can confirm, as a recent high school graduate 6 years ago. But or seven. Gosh, wow.
Yes, you're old.
I am so old, guys. I can confirm that this is something that we talk about in public high schools now, which is great. But for a lot of us, this was something that happened after we went through high school. And so gerrymandering is the act of, and again, for background, state legislatures decide districts in the state. So the Nevada state legislature, after every census, meets and they draw up all the districts. Well, there's a way to kind of rig the game, and it's Nevada, so no surprise, we're pretty bad. As well.
The House always wins.
The House always wins, yes. The party, what's clear is the party that wins in the election leading just after the census is released, they're the real winners. And the Republicans were very smart, and across the whole country, they worked very hard to win in 2010. They used a lot of the Obama, anti-Obamacare rhetoric, and they swept a lot of places. And they used that to draw districts that were favorable to them.
So let's take it down to, imagine I'm 5 years old, right?
Okay.
because we're talking about like census and districts and stuff like that. Let's break it down, make it much simpler, and be like, okay, we've got the state of Nevada or the county of Clark, and we need to break this up, right?
Yeah. So okay, so imagine I had 10 people in the whole state of Nevada.
I love it.
And 5 of them are Democrats and 5 are Republicans. Now, if you drew 2 districts and you split them along party lines, you'd have 1 Democrat, 1 Republican.
So you'd have 5 Democrats in one and 5 Republicans in the other?
Yeah, and that would be if you had 2. Let's suppose we had 4 people, then we would draw 4 districts. Well, then you'd have 2 Republicans and 2 Democrats if you drew it kind of fairly. But people don't live geographically segregated like that. They live amongst each other. So if you draw the districts just right, you could end up with 3 Republicans or 3 Democrats and only 1 by drawing the line so that you have like 2 and 1, 2 and 1, 2 and 1, and then you put all the Democrats for that 4th district, 4 Democrats. So you end up with basically, 3 Republican districts and 1 Democrat district, even though they have identical numbers.
So this is logistically really challenging to do. However,
it's a way of setting the game. And then they do it under the guise. It is. It's rigging the game. And they do this under the guise of, well, we want to keep certain voting blocks together. But what they're really doing, right, is they're taking certain communities. They're taking well-known Black communities. And they're taking well-known LGBT areas and well-known Asian areas. And they're splitting you up so that your vote's less important. That's, in my mind, what gerrymandering does. It's not any kind of fair geographical districting. It's not a equal numbers proportion. Now, they are equal numbers, but the way they draw the districts is they try to give themselves advantages in voter registration in all of those districts. And so my mom and I live, like, I want to say maybe 8 or 9 miles apart, but we're gerrymandered into the same assembly district. It's insanity. I mean, it's crazy. I'm barely... see if I can get it on the camera here. I'm barely etched into Assembly District 20. And down here over on Sunset, she's barely, like literally, like it cuts through her like neighbors and includes her. All right. Now, we didn't plan this. It just happens that we're in the same Assembly District, which is cool. If I ever ran, my mom could vote for me. So there's at least 1 vote.
We got 1 already.
But you know, what's crazy to me is that there's gerrymandering all over the state, and you can look it up and you can see. Now, I will warn you, Nevada's is not nearly as bad as other states. Like, Virginia's is, like, the very worst. They're, like, the home of gerrymandering. Like, if they had their mark on politics, it was, like, welcome to Virginia, home of the gerrymandering. It is terrible there. Like, it literally looks like someone's drawing flowers with districts, the way that they try to loop in certain groups and exclude other ones. And they do it based on their demographic data, and because they know they want to stack the game so they can have more of one and less of another.
And this is another thing that we can prevent by going in there and changing the Constitution.
Yes. Something that we could do, right? So right now the state legislature decides the districts. And
you don't even have to get to the Constitution. Is there another way of going about this?
You could have the state legislature vote to use a math formula, basically, that is fair. And a lot of people have said independent commissions, we should do that. I want to let you know that has been tried in many states, and what the results were is they were not really very different. Independent commissions did not come up with better districts than legislators, because surprise, surprise, it's just people.
Yeah.
It's people with a mandate to try and make districts, like give everybody a representative. And so they'll put all of one community into one district, so they get one voice, and then nobody else, no other district has any of their voices. And so it's reinforcing all of the political groupthink, you know, the echo chamber. I mean, this is echo chamber on a voter registration, carving up the map level. And so, some way that we could change that is we could use a math formula that splits them up into geographically complete. So like least number of cuts. So it's a smallest number of cuts possible, and it keeps all of the districts with the same number of people.
Gotcha.
Yep. And there are many formulas that will do that. And I believe that is a way we can use math. And I'm a math person. So of course, I think that's what we should use. But if we use a math formula, we don't have to worry about it being biased.
You know, I got into
it draws it the same way every time.
I got into a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and we were talking about how there's these old laws, like what is it, Hammurabi's laws and things like that, and how they're very old and they don't account for our current civilization. And then he used that as an example for our what's the new Supreme Court, the new guy going for Supreme Court or appointed to Supreme Court. He's a big constitutionalist. Oh well. The argument was that that he's all about the Constitution, and the Constitution's an old document, and therefore being a constitutionalist is a really stupid idea because it's an old document and, you know, written several hundred years ago. So why even consider it? And the difference there is a big difference. The difference is the Constitution's a living document that changes with our times. That's why we have amendments to the Constitution. So if you don't like the way things are being run on a local level, a county level, a state level, even a national level, these are things that can be adjusted and they can be changed. So as you learn things like gerrymandering or this ranked choice voting, know that these are things that you can have an impact on, but the only way you're going to have an impact on that is really with two things. One is if you go out there and choose to vote, or two, you choose to get involved to influence others. And those are incredibly important. To find out more about how you can get involved, come visit us, lpnevada.org, or email us, or just contact us, reach out, come to one of our socials. We'd appreciate seeing you there. Until next time, this is Tyus signing off saying, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.